Thanks for downloading this podcast. I'm Kelly Beattie of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of what's overhead during November. Well, we're finally getting back on standard time. That changeover, with clocks falling back an hour, takes place before dawn on November 5th in the U.S. and Canada. Honestly, I think this back-and-forth switching is confusing, and it's getting even more so. The switch happens a week earlier in Europe and Mexico. Down under, our Australian friends move to summertime in early October. Tropical countries don't make the change at all, nor does China or Russia. Anyway, the return to standard time means that most of us are still heading home from work as evening's twilight sets in. That's just fine with me, thank you very much, because it means I can sneak in a little stargazing before dinner time. Whenever the sky is dark, keep an eye out for shooting stars from a meteor shower known as the Taurids. These are bits of debris shed by a periodic comet named Encke. You might see them any time from mid-October through late November. Usually there are far and few between, at most a few per hour from dusk to dawn. But many of them create spectacular fireballs. You can catch a second meteor shower, the Leonids, when it peaks late on the nights of November 16th and 17th. It's usually a fairly weak shower as well, but you might see a handful of shooting stars in the hours after midnight. As was the case last month, you'll have a chance to see great planet action during November. But there's a catch. You'll have to get up before dawn to see it. Venus has been dazzling the past few months, but now it's dropping fast. It rises about 90 minutes before sunrise as November opens, but only 45 minutes ahead of it at month's end. Meanwhile, Jupiter is sneaking up from the horizon. Keep an eye out for it to the lower left of Venus. The two planets edge closer each morning until, before dawn on the 13th, their disks are separated by just a hair, only 1/4 degree apart. Now the diameter of Jupiter is 12 times that of Venus, but it looks dimmer because it's 7 times farther from the Sun than Venus is and 4 times as far from us. To see this remarkable pairing at its best, you'll need a couple of things. First, find a completely unobstructed view toward the east and be outside about 45 minutes before sunrise. They're very low to the horizon. Second, bring a pair of binoculars or a small telescope. Not far away, to the upper right of this dynamic duo, are the star Spica and, a little higher up, the red planet Mars. You faithful listeners might remember that Venus paired tightly with Mars last month. Now it's Jupiter's turn. With all that activity before dawn, will there be anything worth seeing in the evening sky? You bet. After it gets dark, and of course that happens sooner now, look high in the southeast for a giant diamond in the sky that's about the size of your hand with your fingers spread wide apart. Sky watchers the world over know this as the Great Square, representing the chest of Pegasus, the flying horse. Now, the square itself is easy enough to see, but you might have trouble visualizing it as part of a horse. For one thing, the horse is flying upside down. Another thing is the constellation doesn't represent a complete animal. Just the front half. The front legs of Pegasus extend from the top star toward upper right. Its neck and head stretch out and up from the diamond's right corner. Now there are a couple of strings of stars stretching leftward from the big square, and those do seem like hind legs to me. But technically they all belong to the constellation of Andromeda, the changed princess in Greek mythology. Throughout the night, Pegasus flies higher in the sky and gets flipped over even more onto its back. If your skies are reasonably dark, you should be able to make out the Circlet of Pisces, a lovely little pentagon of stars hanging directly under the Great Square. And you can look past Enif, the star that marks Pegasus' nose, to the right by about the width of your clenched fist held at arm's length to reach Delphinus the Dolphin. That's my wife's favorite constellation. Like the circlet, it's fairly faint, but if you can see it at all, it's sure to catch your eye. A tiny diamond with a tail extending down and to the right. Go one fist farther to the right, and you'll chance upon another small constellation called Sagitta, the arrow. And its four main stars really look like one, with the brightest of them marking the point. Return to the Great Square for a moment, and focus on the two stars on the left side. Follow an imaginary line downward from them, about four or five of your fists, until you come to a bright star all on its own above the southern horizon. That's Fomalhaut, the brightest star in the constellation Piscis Austrinus, the southern fish. In fact, Fomalhaut derives from the Arabic words for mouth of the fish. This solitary sparkler is the only really obvious star in this entire stretch of sky. Fomalhaut is fairly close as stars go, only 25 light years away, and astronomers have been paying it a lot of attention. Now, it looks like a single point of light, but actually it's a double or binary star. And astronomers have recently realized that it's actually a triple star. Fomalhaut is also fairly young, and it's surrounded by a dusty disk of debris. Oh, and there's a planet going around it too. Around mid-November at 7 p.m., note what's below Fomalhaut along your horizon. That direction is due south. Now do an about-face to look due north, and you'll find Polaris, the North Star, roughly halfway from the horizon to overhead. Don't expect to be dazzled by Polaris. It's only half as bright as Fomalhaut. Finally, take a moment to look straight up, at 10 p.m. early in November, around 9 at mid-month, and 8 at the end. If your sky is good and dark, and there's no bright moon about, you might just make out a faint, fuzzy glow. That's the Andromeda Galaxy, a near twin of our Milky Way. It's actually headed our way, at about 70 miles per second. These two behemoth star cities will collide in about 4 billion years. Our solar system will still be around then, but you and I surely won't. For other great sky-watching tips, check out skyandtelescope.com. Next month, we'll explore how a bunch of maidens got involved with an angry bull. Until then, I wish you clear skies.